Hello, and welcome to Legal Bites. If you're new here, my name is Alita. I'm a lawyer licensed in California and DC, and on this channel, we explain the law one bite at a time. We don't give legal advice, but we do talk about how the law works and try to look into our crystal ball to see how things might turn out. If you're enjoying this on YouTube, we'd love it if you could like the video, subscribe to the channel, share it with friends, all the great YouTube-y stuff. And if you want to listen while out and about, we're now offering our live streams in podcast form where you can leave a rating and review. Links are in the description below, as well as to our clips channel where you can find some of the best clips taken from our live streams. Otherwise, if you want to catch me elsewhere, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And if you want to support the channel, you can do so on Locals, Patreon, or by becoming a YouTube member, or by buying some really awesome Legal Bites merch. Again, all links are in the description below. And with that said, let's get into it. Hello, hello, and welcome once again. I hope you guys are having a happy Wednesday. We are halfway through the week. Just yesterday, we got some documents that were dumped on the docket for the Johnny Depp versus Amber Heard lawsuit. And there's some interesting stuff that came out, including Johnny Depp's witness list. There's a bunch of people that whether you're familiar with this case or not, you'll probably be familiar with at least some of these people, including Paul Bettany and others. So I wanted to focus in on one of those documents that just came in yesterday, which was filed on March 11th by Johnny Depp. It's another motion for summary judgment. The last video that I did on this case was covering a motion for summary judgment, but this one is on a very specific issue, and I'm sure you can tell by the title of this video which one that is. This is one that has been litigated, not fully litigated, as in the court has come to an opinion, and that's kind of the crux of it, is that this issue has come up multiple times throughout this litigation. I meant to be streaming this video a few hours ago. And the reason why I didn't was because I was still going through the docket trying to find any sort of place where the court has talked about anti-SLAPP. And I'll get into exactly what anti-SLAPP is if you're unfamiliar. But this is something that both sides have been trying to sort of push for an answer, it seems like. And it seems that this is something that the court doesn't really want to rule on, at least not at this point in time. And I think that there's a reason for it. So we will, we'll get into all of that stuff, starting with what exactly is an anti-SLAPP motion, or an anti-SLAPP argument, and what it is specifically in Virginia and how it's kind of different from other places, at least different from what I know in California. So definitely have been researching a bit on how exactly it is in Virginia and how it's different from other places. So, hey, In Fantasy I Die, thank you so much for the super chat. It says, Uncivil is back. Bites is on more regularly. I'm looking forward to seeing your coverage of this trial. Alita, I hope the spelling is right. Unbreaded. Yes, the spelling is correct. Thank you. I appreciate it. But I wouldn't blame you if you got it wrong, because it's not a very common name or spelling. And a lot of people spell it like Alita Battle Angel, and I don't blame them for that either. In Uncivil Law, he says, I'd like to tell you about crypto. Please don't. And I feel like now that I just read that out loud, that's probably going to get demonetized, because YouTube doesn't like those kinds of channels. But I know that Uncivil Law doesn't like to talk about it on his channel because he was just hacked. I'm really glad that you got your channel back, Uncivil Law. I know that was a scary moment to lose. What is it? Hundreds of videos that you've done at this point? That's a lot of content and a lot of subscribers to lose overnight just because somebody hacked in, despite your best efforts to keep your account secure. I'm really sorry you had to go through that, but I'm really happy that you got everything back. I'm really, really happy about that. Anyhow, let's get into this motion for summary judgment. I'll kind of do the intro to it, and then I'll go into anti-SLAPP in a little bit more in a little bit more depth so that we can get into it. All right, here we go. So this is the memorandum of law in support of plaintiff's motion for summary judgment as to defendant's anti-SLAPP immunity. Wait a minute, uncivil law, you still have 500 videos missing? I'm really sorry about that. That does suck. Hopefully they come back. But also, I mean, the idea that you I don't think I even have 500 videos on my channel at all. So the fact that you have videos, but 500 are missing is, you have a lot of content out there. I need to catch up to you. Anyhow, okay, let's get back into it. So, memorandum of law in support of plaintiff's motion for summary judgment as to defendant's anti-SLAPP immunity. As a matter of law, Ms. Heard is not entitled to immunity from Mr. Depp's claim for defamation under Virginia's anti-SLAPP statute, and her defense on that basis can and should be resolved in Mr. Depp's favor on summary judgment. Ms. Heard has not been named in this action for making a statement on a matter of public concern, and her liability is not, in quotes, solely, in parentheses, or at all, based on a statement of public concern. Quite the contrary, Ms. Heard has been named in this action based on the defamatory implication that she is a victim of domestic abuse and sexual violence at the hands of Mr. Depp. It is that defamatory implication of wrongful conduct that forms the basis of Mr. Depp's claims in this action. And because that defamatory implication relates solely to the personal grievances between the parties and does not rise to the level of a matter of public concern with broader implications for society beyond the two litigants in this action, Virginia's anti-SLAPP statute is not applicable. So, first off, usually a motion for summary judgment is going to refer somewhat to evidence, but this is basically just sort of, this is a motion that is arguing as a matter of law, meaning that it's not going to use really any evidence. Unlike the last motion for summary judgment, which referred to Amber Heard's response to an interrogatory that she didn't really give much of a response. And so therefore, Johnny Depp was free to say, hey, then I guess you don't have any evidence to support your claim, which you have the burden of. So therefore, you should lose. That's kind of that's the usual argument for a motion for summary judgment. This, on the other hand, is a little bit more like a motion to dismiss. And the reason for that is because anti-SLAPP law in Virginia is weird, in my opinion. This is me coming from California that has a very strong anti-SLAPP law, and it's very strong, and it usually comes very early. And it has a very specific mechanism that's used. Which in Virginia, it seems much more, let's just say, loosey-goosey. Okay. Part one, summary of relevant facts and allegations. Mr. Depp's claims in this action were predicated on the defamatory implications about Mr. Depp and Ms. Heard's op-ed in the Washington Post, i.e. the claim that Ms. Heard is an abuse victim who suffered domestic abuse and sexual violence. So, for example, they cite two paragraphs 1 through 2. The op-ed depended on the central premise that Ms. Heard was a domestic abuse victim and that Mr. Depp perpetrated domestic violence against her. As such, the defamation claim at issue relates to the events of the party's personal relationship, and the truthfulness or falsity of Ms. Heard's statements about abuse that allegedly occurred in the privacy of the relationship and marriage. Of note, Ms. Heard's statements did not occur in isolation, but were a revival of prior statements and actions she had taken, including her conduct in walking into court in front of the press in 2016, supposedly with bruises on her face from Mr. Depp, and accusing Mr. Depp of domestic violence and abuse in court filings and in the press. That history is alleged in Mr. Depp's complaint. And then it cites paragraph 2 of the complaint, where they have in quotations, the op-ed plainly was about Ms. Heard's purported victimization after she publicly accused Mr. Depp of domestic abuse in 2016 when she appeared in court with an apparently battered face. End of quote. Ms. Heard openly acknowledges and does not dispute this history. And then it cites to her counterclaim. Paragraph 5, on May 27, 2016, Ms. Heard walked into California State Court with bruises on her face. So,
Then that's basically the intro. Then they go to part two, where they talk about Virginia's anti-SLAPP statute. By its clear and explicit terms, Virginia's anti-SLAPP provides immunity from liability only when a claim for defamation is based solely on a statement regarding matters of public concern. And then it cites to Virginia Code Section 8.01-223.2, which is the anti-SLAPP statute, where in quotations they have, a person shall be immune from civil liability for a claim of defamation based solely on statements regarding matters of public concern that would be protected under the First Amendment to the United States Constitution made by that person that are communicated to a party. For Ms. Heard to be able to take advantage of the statute, then she must establish that she has been sued based solely on a statement regarding a matter of public concern that is thereby entitled to protection under the First Amendment. Okay, so here's my first thought on this, and I'm going to pull up the actual language of the statute. This argument actually could be stronger. I think that they may have missed one opportunity for an argument here. And there's a very specific reason, and it's because the anti-SLAPP statute actually has two parts to it. The first part is this, what they say here, regarding matters of public concern. This is a correct citation. This is a correct characterization of part of this statute. It's not misleading in any way. Like, this is actually true. But let me show you the Virginia Code here. So this reads here, part one, regarding matters of public concern that would be protected under the First Amendment to the United States Constitution made by that person that are communicated to a third party or to made at a public hearing, blah, blah, blah. We can ignore that. But let's take a look at this last sentence here. The immunity provided by this section shall not apply to any statements made with actual or constructive knowledge that they are false or with reckless disregard for whether they are false. Now, if you are someone who has been following this case and has been following defamation cases generally for people that are in the public limelight, people that are public figures, you know that a defamation case, the plaintiff has to prove not only that the person made a false statement about the plaintiff, and that the false statement was made to other people, and that therefore the plaintiff suffered reputational harm of some sort, but also that the defendant made that statement not just negligently, but with actual malice. Now, what we're talking about with actual malice, of course, is that you have to show, the plaintiff has to show, that the defendant made the statement either knowing that it was false or with reckless disregard as to the truth or falsity of the statement. So that's something for any kind of a defamation case for any public figure. And so here we have two public figures. They both are alleging some level of defamation claims against one another now, because starting with Johnny Depp, he's the original one that filed this defamation claim in 2019 because of her op-ed in the Washington Post. And then Amber Heard came back and filed counterclaims against him, alleging defamation because of things that his lawyer said. Now, when we're talking about the anti-SLAPP statute here, there are two parts that I just mentioned. There's the matter of public concern. So let me state it this way, just to make it clear. So in order for any person, whether it's a public whether we're talking about people that are in the public eye, or, you know, regular Joe Schmoes asserting defamation claims against each other, they can fall under the statute if the statement, number one, addresses matters of public concern, and two, is not made with actual malice. So in this case, if you have a statement where you can show that a statement was made with actual malice, then that statement is not going to fall under the anti-SLAPP statute. And that's exactly what's going on in this case. In the case of Johnny Depp against Amber Heard, he's saying that her statement was made with actual malice because he has to show that, because he's a public figure. So basically, functionally, what the Virginia anti-slap statute does is, you know, where we have people that are, that have different standards of proof, depending on whether they're a public figure or not a public figure. For non-public figures, in some circumstances, it raises their standard of proving. So it raises their standard of proof for their claims, so long as they are talking about something of a public matter. Now, in this case, a public figure could fall under this statute so long as, number one, they are not acting they didn't make the statement with actual malice. And number two, if they are talking about something of a public concern. The problem with asserting anti-slap immunity against, you know, for a statement that was made about somebody that's in the public eye is no matter what, you run into this issue of actual malice. So if you can show it, it still comes down to whether or not the statement was made in actual malice, because Johnny Depp affirmatively has to prove that. And Amber Heard would affirmatively have to show, if she wants to use this defense, that she didn't. So I think that probably is one of the reasons why this judge has not actually ruled on this, despite the fact that they have, they've had actual motion practice. There have been several motions to dismiss, pleas in bargain, where both sides have argued about this issue on anti-slap, about whether or not Amber Heard is entitled to this immunity. The judge did rule on whether or not Johnny Depp is entitled to the immunity. And the judge found that the statements that were alleged, that are allegedly attributable to him through his lawyer, were not statements of public concern. So the court said that he didn't have any immunity under anti-slap. So that was one. But otherwise, the judge hasn't really decided anything in terms of anti-slap for the issue of Amber Heard falling under anti-slap. So anyhow, so that's the first part here, is that I think that this argument could be bolstered by Johnny Depp saying, oh, and also she doesn't fall under anti-slap because of the fact that she made the statement with actual malice. So anyhow, okay, let's go on to part three. Ms. Heard is not entitled to rely on Virginia's anti-slap statute. All right, so here's where they get into a little bit more meat on with the argument here. Okay, here the court need not reach the factual question of whether Ms. Heard acted with malice in falsely accusing Mr. Depp of abusing her, which she necessarily did, because the statute is inapplicable to Mr. Depp's claims against Ms. Heard as a matter of law for the reasons set forth below. So, I mean, they do kind of address the actual malice issue, but I still think that they could have, and probably maybe should have, made the argument that even if she, you know, somehow was making the statement for, you know, the statement was solely under matters or solely regarding matters of public concern, that she still was acting with actual malice. Anyhow, okay. First, Mr. Depp is not seeking to hold Ms. Heard liable. Did I say Mr. Heard? Let me restart that sentence. First, Mr. Depp is not seeking to hold Mr. Heard liable for any assertion that could be construed as a statement of public concern, but rather for a defamatory implication about the private events or non-events of her relationship with Mr. Depp. That is Ms. Heard's potential liability for defamation arises solely out of the defamatory implication of her words that Mr. Depp abused her. Courts have recognized repeatedly that liability for defamation may rest on defamatory innuendo, which is no more protected by the First Amendment than is defamatory speech expressed by any other means. And then it cites to a Virginia Supreme Court case, Pendleton versus Newsom. In such a case, defamation by implication, in such a case of defamation by implication, liability is obviously and necessarily based on the defamatory innuendo and not on any other meaning that could be derived from the words at issue. Thus, for instance, in Pendleton, the Virginia Supreme Court explained that even a literally true statement that might otherwise be protected by the First Amendment is actionable where it contains a defamatory innuendo and allowed a case to proceed based on the defamatory meaning of the words when read in context. The court noted that because defamatory speech falls outside the protection of the First Amendment, a First Amendment analysis is inapposite in a case in which a plaintiff must allege and ultimately prove that the defendant intended his words to express a defamatory innuendo, that the words actually did so, and that the plaintiff was actually defamed thereby. In other words, the proper focus of the court's inquiry is the defamatory innuendo about the plaintiff, not on on any other meaning that might be ascribed to the words at issue. Here, as in Pendleton, Ms. Heard has been sued for the defamatory innuendo of her words. And then it cites to Pendleton with quotations. In this context, it is clear that any defamatory implication was aimed directly at the plaintiff. And here, as in Pendleton, that defamatory implication is not entitled to protection under the First Amendment. And then it cites again with another citation or another quotation from Pendleton. Defendants also argue that their statements were protected by the First Amendment. Again, that position may be sound if in statements were read out of context, but a defamatory innuendo is no more protected by the First Amendment than is defamatory speech expressed by any other means. So basically, so this is talking about Pendleton. Now, that case was about a really sad situation. I looked this up earlier. So there was a 7-year-old student who was allergic to peanuts, and at the school, she came in contact with one. And before this point, the mother had previously provided all kinds of information about it. She had a whole like medical plan and everything. She had provided all kinds of, she had provided like a junior EpiPen, and the school ended up being like, no, actually keep this for yourself. We have stuff, you know, here in case anything happens. So like, but the mom had done like a series of steps to make sure that her daughter was safe at school in case she ever came in contact with one of the things that she was allergic to, that she was deathly allergic to. And unfortunately, she came in contact. She had like ingested a peanut or something and then died. And then I believe she sued the school. And then in the process of responding to media requests and also concerned parents that wanted to make sure that their kids were safe, the various defendants that were different school administrators and I think the principal and other people, there were a number of responses where they basically said, yes, this is tragic, and these things can be prevented if the parent actually communicates with us and gives us all of the important information for their child to be safe and provides us with XYZ. Like, these are all things that the mother actually did. But the way that they said their policy in response to questions of concern, in response to, you know, media requests about the case, made it sound like they were saying, yeah, the mom didn't do what she was supposed to do here. She's kind of actually to blame. She's responsible for her child to some extent that we are not fully responsible for. And that's not true. So technically what they were saying was true. That was a policy that they had, and that was something that is beneficial and is preventative for any kid in that kind of a situation. But in that situation, because of the way that they put it, it implied that the mother was somehow to blame. And that is factually incorrect in context and by innuendo. And so basically that does apply very closely to this case where Amber Heard in her Washington Post op-ed said, I received all of this hate after everything and you know, society, blah, 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 this stuff. Like, you know, she probably did endure a lot afterwards. That isn't necessarily because the allegations that she made were true, right? Because there are a lot of people that have believed for a long time that those allegations are not true. Anyhow, so that is applicable in this case. Now, going back to the MSJ, and I see it in the chat, not injected a peanut, ingested as in ate. Also, Crusader Saracen, alaus ir arbata pinigų. Thank you. That in Lithuanian kind of sort of means beer and tea money. Thank you. I appreciate it. So, okay, coming back to the MSJ after kind of giving a little bit of background on that case. The defamatory implication Ms. Heard made about Mr. Depp in the op-ed is not regarding matters of public concern because it pertains only to what allegedly occurred in her private domestic relationship with Mr. Depp. As generally analyzed by courts, a matter of public concern is one which relates to a matter of political, social, or other concern in the community as opposed to a matter of only personal interest. And then it cites DeConnick v. Myers, which is a United States Supreme Court case. And that one is, let me see here. Hang on a second. That one is interesting too, because that one, I mean, it was more about an employment situation, but the definition is still basically the same. It's a matter of political, social, or other concern to the community. And typically when these, sorry, I am looking for something specific here. I have some case law that I pulled up elsewhere. Okay. So I'm going to pull up some, oh, I didn't realize that I was still showing all of that. I pulled all that up anyway for this anyhow. Okay, so when we're talking about matters of public concern, courts are typically going to look at something like elections. Talking about elections, that's going to be a matter of public concern. Talking about any kind of government proceedings, that's generally going to be pretty solidly matters of public concern. A lot of these cases have been talking about situations of employment for the government. So there can be some kind of a blend between the two. But courts are pretty particular. You know, they say that, you know, when you have a situation where there are public proceedings involved in, let's say, letting an employee go from a government job, there are certain due process things that have to happen. So, you know, statements can be made about that, which are of public concern, but sometimes the speech is simply a grievance of a purely personal nature, which is not a matter of public concern. This is something that is a personal thing. And so therefore it wouldn't fall under the statute here in Virginia. And so here, the motion for summary judgment also goes on. It says newsworthiness alone is not enough, and references to particular private grievances generally do not rise to the level of matters of public concern. And then it cites to the Tenth Circuit, which says, noting the lack of public concern with respect to a statement that merely deals with personal disputes and grievances unrelated to the public's interest, and explaining that speech that airs grievances of a purely personal nature typically does not involve matters of public concern. So when we're talking about using case law, so Connick v. Myers is the United States Supreme Court, which is going to be binding on every single court, right? It is the highest court in the United States. Here, 10th Circuit is not, 10th Circuit is not where Virginia is. It doesn't cover Virginia. So it's not binding, but it is persuasive. So, you know, either party can use case law from other jurisdictions, but if there is something that comes from either Virginia state courts or from the Fourth Circuit, because that is federal, but it covers Virginia, then that would be stronger. But personally, I couldn't find anything. I researched a little bit. I couldn't find anything in the Fourth Circuit or in Virginia that covers this specific issue, which is kind of interesting because it is a Virginia statute that we're talking about. And I would think that there would be some litigation on this issue. Anyhow, going back to this, simply stated, Mr. Depp is not suing Ms. Heard for making statements about society in general. Rather, he was suing her for publicly naming him as an abuser and forever tarnishing his good name, an act that, coming from an ex-spouse, is fundamentally personal in nature. Only if the defamatory innuendo at issue were regarding a matter of public concern could Ms. Heard credibly seek to rely on the anti-slap statute. Regardless of its ultimate outcome, the nature and basis of Mr. Depp's allegations preclude application of the anti-slap statute, since a claim that a particular individual was abusive in a domestic relationship is simply not a matter of public concern. As in Pendleton, this is a case about defamatory innuendo targeting a single person. So one thing that I think actually would have made this a little bit stronger, if I had my druthers, and this might be just a little bit nitpicky, but I would, looking through the docket, I saw that there was one of the court's orders in this case, it talked a lot about this Pendleton case. And it talked about, it was actually one of the first motions to dismiss, I think the first one actually, where Amber Heard tried to get the complaint dismissed because of the fact that it doesn't specifically name him. But yeah, the court totally looked at it a bunch and determined that yes, this is fine. This case is fine. You can have a statement that is defamatory by innuendo. So in this motion for summary judgment, I would actually say not only have courts determined this, but this particular court has determined that in this particular situation, this falls under a situation just like Pendleton. So anyhow, it's just my little druthers. And then before I get to the second argument, let me get these super chats here. Crusader Saracen, what's the better way to say beer or tea money? Google Translate has left wanting in many respects. It is. It depends on the grammar structure that you want. So if it's alaus is beer, arbata is tea. Pinyagai alu ir ar. Shoot, I'm a little bit rusty on that. But I know it's not that. Anyhow, I'm gonna have to look that up. But it was close. It was very close. Anyhow, Dragon's Treasure. Did someone say tea? Yes, of course. And by the way, if you guys do love, I know someone, my grandmother is screaming right now. It's true. She is. She's rolling in her grave right now. Sorry, muchita. If you guys are interested in really good tea, Dragon's Treasure, Dragon's Treasure teas.com, I believe. Sorry, Dragon's Treasure. Sorry, tea man. If you go there, there are some really delicious teas. One of my favorites personally is Butterbeer. You can use a coupon code that I have, LegalBites, all one word. You get 10% off, and it goes, proceeds go to helping me out. I get a little bit of a kickback. It goes to helping Dragon's Treasure, which is a very small business. It's amazing. It's delicious. It's wonderful. And it's a win-win-win, right? Anyhow. So, Candice Marie, sorry if this has been asked, but can you go over the Manson case against? Yes, that one. I have been looking at it. I've been meaning to dig into it. I I'm going to in the next week or so, I'll take a look into it, because I know that it's a very similar issue. A lot of people have been saying that it's a very similar issue. So I will definitely be looking into that for sure. Why do you feel like you've been stabbed in the heart? Oh, because of the website. Well, I will link to the website in the description below. Okay. Or actually, hey, Dragon's Treasure, drop your website in the chat, and then I'll also put it in the description. Okay. Anyhow, let's get back to the motion for summary judgment. So the second reason why Johnny Depp says that Ms. Heard needs to be taken down from the anti-slap litigation is, second, Ms. Heard's attempt to take advantage of the anti-slap statute also fails because her liability arises out of a course of conduct that is broader and older than the op-ed, much of which manifestly did not consist of statements of public concern. The anti-slap statute only applies when a claim for defamation is brought solely based on a statement regarding matters of public concern. But here, Ms. Heard's liability arises out of a course of conduct that culminated in her revival of her abuse allegations in the op-ed. Mr. Depp's claim for defamation is not solely based on the contents of the op-ed. It is also based on other conduct of Ms. Heard, such as her actions when, on May 27, 2016, Ms. Heard walked into California State Court with bruises on her face and full view of the press to obtain a domestic violence restraining order, a fact that she specifically alleged in her own counterclaim. Okay. Ms. Heard's prior conduct in seeking a domestic violence restraining order and parading in front of cameras with supposed bruises on her face, marks which two sets of police officers testified did not exist, cannot be construed as anything other than acts that are fundamentally personal in nature, focused on a personal dispute between Mr. Depp and Ms. Heard at the bitter end of their marriage. Now, this part right here, I'm not so sure that I like it in terms of a strong argument. In other words, to be more clear, I don't think that is the strongest argument. At least I don't know that I would have gone with that, because so courts have long held that conduct can be considered speech. Some types of conduct can be considered speech. But I think that walking around with bruises on your face are not necessarily those on their own are not acts that could be statements. I understand that, you know, taken in the context, you know, maybe you could look at it a little bit differently because of the fact that she's going into the courthouse, she's got cameras that she knows are going to be there. She's doing it specifically. Or at least, you know, the allegation anyhow is that she was, you know, she had specifically had these dressed up bruises on her face for the purposes of trying to convince the court that she, you know, needed a restraining order against him for domestic violence. But it's strange that this is something that is being characterized as a statement. To me, I don't necessarily like that argument, but I understand that basically what they're getting at is their overall argument has been, and the court has agreed with them in the past, that the Washington Post article was basically in a sense, a republishing of her previous statements about, you know, alleging domestic abuse, which restarts the statute of limitations. So, you know, he's able to kind of reach back to these other statements that she's made about these other incidents, about, you know, the throwing the phone at her face supposedly, and the Australia incident, and all kinds of different things that she's alleged in the past. So he, you know, he's able to kind of reach back further because of the fact that the Washington Post article, by implication, by innuendo, also reaches back to those various incidents. So, you know, I understand that that's basically what they're getting at here, but I think that the way that they go about it is maybe not the best. Okay. Not to say that this is going to be a failing argument because of that, but it's just me stating my opinion as we go through. And yeah, don't forget to use your gavel on the like button and ring that bell. Thanks, Secret Squirrel. So, and then they cite to Jones versus Union County of the Sixth Circuit, commenting that while combating domestic violence might generally be a matter of public concern, a particular instance of seeking protection from an abusive spouse was far more a matter of private interest than public concern. Now, again, this is not binding authority. This is persuasive authority. So the court can choose to ignore it. But the court might be very well interested in going in and reading this court opinion's reasoning to see if it's something that is relatively parallel to what a Virginia court would say. But it's an important thing to note that some courts, you know, somewhere have made that distinction. Thus, Ms. Heard's op-ed did not occur as an isolated event, but occurred in the context of that prior conduct and Ms. Heard's prior allegations. As such, Ms. Heard may not simply rely on a mechanical argument that if the op-ed touches on matters of public concern, she is automatically entitled to employ the anti-SLAPP statute. And that is true. That is true. You can't just like couch a private concern. You can't just couch a private concern with a public matter and say like, oh, like I'm not really talking about this private thing where I may or may not have been lying about this other person that they did something terrible, you know. But they, you know, just because you are also talking about a matter of public concern doesn't mean that you automatically can say whatever you want about a private matter. Okay. Mr. Depp's claim for defamation is not based solely on the op-ed read in isolation, but rather the op-ed in its full context. And then it cites to Smithfield Foods, the United Food and Commercial Workers International, noting that the omitted section of the above statute, which protects from liability based solely on statements made at a public hearing, was not applicable when the conduct at issue involves far more than statements made solely at public hearings. And this is another, you know, situation where I would have, just to kind of hammer the point even further, I would have wanted this to say, if I were writing it, I would have wanted this to say, and that in so many words, that the court has concluded, the court has agreed so far in this case that Mr. Depp's claim for defamation is not based solely on the op-ed read in isolation, but rather the op-ed in its full context. You know, like maybe say that and then say, oh yeah, and the court has agreed. Because this is just kind of like saying, hey, like we're not trying to convince you of anything that you haven't said otherwise. Like you've already basically agreed with almost our entire argument. So let us help you along the way so that you can fully agree with us on these other things that you may or may not have made a decision on yet. Part 5, conclusion. For the foregoing reasons, the court should grant Mr. Depp's motion and find that Ms. Heard is not entitled to anti-SLAPP immunity. Okay. So, and then that's basically the end of it. It was filed on March 22nd. So, overall, my thought is that this case is probably, or not this case, this motion is, it seems like it's not a typical motion for summary judgment. It seems like they're just kind of using that as a vehicle to sort of poke and prod at the court to say like, hey, you know, we had all of these motions that have been filed and, you know, I think it was most recently Amber Heard's legal team filed a plea and bargain, a plea in, what is this? I want to say plea and bargain. It's a plea in something, PIB. Let me pull this up again. I was just like spending the last hours staring at this docket and taking in a bunch of stuff. Give me one second, guys. Filings. Plea and bar. Okay. Plea and bargain. That's so silly. Okay. So most recently, Amber filed a plea in bar alleging these defamation claims. And actually she was alleging, or not the defamation claims, alleging the anti-SLAPP immunity. And she also alleged it, if I remember correctly. Now I just went through a bunch of filings in the last few hours. But if I remember correctly, she also argued that with other arguments for in her plea and bar, in her motion to dismiss, which then Johnny Depp filed in opposition to, and then she filed a reply, which is normal in motion practice. You have kind of this tennis match that goes across the fence where all sides kind of argue until the end. They have a certain amount of time to respond. And then the court says, okay, we're going to have a hearing and then we're going to, you know, I'll make a decision. Now, in this case, correct me if I'm wrong, because I know that there are a lot of people that are very, very, that have very detailed knowledge and memory of, you know, what has happened in this case so far, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the court in that case, in that situation, actually ruled on everything except for the anti-slap issues. At one point the first judge, before it was he was replaced by a female judge. I think it was Judge White was his name, determined that he was not going to rule on the anti-slap issues early on because Amber Heard had requested, she had requested initially her count one was a request for, help me if you know, guys. Oh, geez, where is it? Count three. I'm scrolling. Count two, count one. Okay, declaratory judgment. That's the word. So she was requesting a declaratory judgment, which basically means, hey, judge, I want you to make a decision ahead of time before we have any actual litigation on this. That, you know, we want you to make a decision for us here ahead of time. And the judge determined that there just wasn't a good enough reason for it, basically. So anyhow, other than that, the judge really hasn't made any big opinions on this anti-slap issue. So I think that really what this motion for summary judgment is to try to once again put it in front of the judge and see if he'll make, if now she will make a decision. Because like I said, he was replaced by a female judge. Whether or not this is going to succeed, I don't know. I mean, it's. I think that the judge is probably actually going to probably take into consideration maybe not just what's been put out in this motion for summary judgment, but also what's been put out in the previous motions and oppositions and replies that have kind of gone back and forth in this case that have not really been resolved. I mean, there's articles from January 2021, over a year ago, talking about how the parties were waiting on the judge to rule on that issue. And I haven't seen any opinion by the court on that issue. It's weird. It's weird to me because I'm so used to seeing anti-slap. And by the way, I should have said this at the beginning. I'm sorry, guys. SLAP stands for strategic lawsuits against public participation, basically meaning where somebody files a lawsuit and it's strictly strategic. Like it's not really, they don't really have any real legitimate basis for it, but all they're trying to do is try to prevent someone from participating in the public. Usually it has to do with it. It's a First Amendment issue. So I've seen people, you know, file a lawsuit against somebody for filing a lawsuit. that's pretty squarely in somebody's First Amendment right to petition their government. But in California, what happens is there's a very specific mechanism, which is called a special motion to strike. Now, generally speaking, when somebody files a lawsuit, they file a complaint, then the defendant can respond either with an answer or with a motion to dismiss. Along with a motion to dismiss, they can also, or separately, they can also file what's called a motion to strike. Motion to dismiss basically means to dismiss the entire complaint. And in state court in California, it's called a demur and not a motion to dismiss. A motion to strike usually is going to be directed specifically at specific causes of action. So in this case, they're count one, count two, count three. So it would be a motion to strike that would be addressing specifically one or two or all three of them even to see if, you know, maybe the court doesn't want to dismiss the entire case, but maybe they would want to dismiss one or two of the causes of action because they're just, it's just one or two too many. But in California, for an anti-SLAPP, you have a special motion to strike, which basically would undermine the entire lawsuit because you're saying this lawsuit was filed for improper purposes. It was purely strategic, and it's purely to basically infringe my First Amendment rights. And it's very specific. Somebody files an anti-SLAPP motion. And what happens is everything stops. There's no discovery in the case. There's maybe some limited discovery only for the purposes of like the motion practice for the anti-SLAPP, you know, because in order to respond or to fully flesh out the issues for the anti-SLAPP, you need some discovery. So sometimes courts will allow that, but generally speaking, the entire case freezes until you resolve that issue. And it happens very fast. And then you have attorney's fees that get that go to whichever side wins, because it's a very serious statute. California courts take it very seriously. Now, in Virginia, it seems like they don't have any specific mechanism for it. They just have this statute that basically says, you know, what we went over earlier, and courts can decide at the very end of the litigation on the on whether or not the defendant is entitled to immunity under the statute, which is weird because the whole point in anti-SLAPP statutes, generally speaking, is to prevent this kind of needless litigation, needless discovery, needless, you know, motion practice. So if in this case there was a determination that, you know, one or both of these is entitled to this immunity under anti-SLAPP, it would be kind of, let's just say, ass backwards for that to be at the very end, because you say, okay, yes, the litigation was pointless, but we've already been through all of that litigation. So then what? Like, there's no preventative measure for it. And in fact, in 2020, Virginia tried with multiple attempts to update the statute for that purpose. There was one bill that came out of the House of the Virginia legislature and one bill that came out of the Senate in the Virginia legislature. And neither of them passed because they were both a little bit different from one another. One of them focused on the mechanism, like the specific kind of motion that you can do. And then the other one focused on, I can't remember what exactly, but they, for whatever reason, the Senate and the House couldn't agree on one method what was I going to say? Like one method of updating the statute so that it kind of makes a little bit more sense. But anyhow, so that's where we're at now with this Virginia anti-SLAPP. And I don't know, but what do you guys think? Let me know in the chat. Let me know in the comments down below whether or not you think that she's going to be that Amber Heard is going to be entitled to immunity under anti-SLAPP. You know, is she talking about? Is her statement in the Washington Post talking primarily about an issue of public concern? Because she is talking about the Me Too movement. She is talking about, you know, powerful structures protecting abusers. And there, to a certain extent, you know, taking a step back from the facts of this case, if you look at other cases, other instances, you know, you can look at Harvey Weinstein, for example, who was proved under court of law and a criminal trial in New York. He was proved to be an abuser. And so there were a lot of people that were protecting him. So to a certain extent, that overarching message, sure. Okay, sure. But on the other hand, to what extent is she, in a sense, personally indicting Johnny Depp in the Washington Post article? To what extent are her statements personal or public? Issues of personal concern or issues of public concern? And then is she making her statements? if you think that she is not telling the truth, if the statements that she's making were they made with actual malice? I think that because she's alleging that these are things that happened to her, it's pretty easy to show actual malice in a case like this, because if you get there for, you know, with the dishonesty part, she would know if something had not happened to her, right? Okay. With that, I think that I will end it there. I don't see any big questions in here, other than I see one question: why not in California? I think, why is this case not in California? So for anybody that is new to this case, it is interesting, right? Because both parties are from California and this case is in Virginia. The reason for that, it has nothing to do with the motion for summary judgment, but I'll answer it anyway, because I anticipate that there's probably a lot of people that are new to this case. The reason why the lawsuit was filed in Virginia is because the basis of the lawsuit, the heart of the lawsuit, is that Washington Post article, which Amber Heard wrote in late 2018. And the Washington Post is headquartered in Virginia, specifically Northern Virginia. So that's how the jurisdiction comes in. And the parties both fully litigated that, and the court decided that that was the correct and proper place for to bring it. So anyhow, yes, I will absolutely give India a hug for you guys. She's wonderful. She's always sleeping. And Crusader Saracen, palaiminia mai mochete. Thanks. That's palaiminia mai. That's like good wishes to your grandmother. So thank you. I'll leave it there. I'll see you guys in the next video. See ya.